so it's Brian Tome at the pulpit first to start the 8th annual Super Bowl of Preaching.
All right. Hey, you know, just a word of what we're doing here today. You know, no matter what any American spiritual orientation is, this is the one holiday that all Americans enjoy, Super Bowl. And so a number of years ago, we said, man, so often people who go to church just seem angry, bitter, anal, uptight. We need to make sure at least one time a year we do nothing but have fun. And so that's why we do the Super Bowl this year, because we want to have fun. And hope you're having fun today as well. But not only that, yeah. Not only that, we're hoping that God meets us in some way here today. So God, I'm praying for that. I'm praying that you would meet us as we laugh here today. You've given us the ability to laugh, and you've also given us the ability to learn. So I pray that you enable that to happen. I pray these things according to your character. Amen. Well, obviously, we are doing all kinds of excessive fun on the whole man theme, the manly theme. We're looking at the stereotypes of what a man actually is not. So oftentimes in our society, as we looked at last week, that men try to exert their manhood by drinking excessively, by having 20-inch biceps, by constantly climbing the ladder through their sexual escapades. These are ways that men try to attain quote-unquote manhood, and it's not the case at all. In fact, I know many 40-year-olds who are boys, and I know some 16-year-olds and 15-year-olds who are men. And so we've been working with my son, my 16-year-old son. What is it that separates a man from a boy? And five marks that we looked at last week in review. Number one, a man supports himself, or a man works. Boys don't want to work. A man actually works, and he values that.
Holy cow. We talk about the preparation. I heard this last week. I didn't like it the first time.
You know, every time he does this, I think, add number six, redundancy.
Yeah.
Number two, a man has a vision for his life. Boys don't have visions. Boys just do whatever feels fun and good in the moment. A man says, that's where I'm going, that's where I'm going to go. We're going to look at today two figures in the Bible, a man by the name of Samson and a woman by the name of Delilah, who had the external marks of manliness or womanliness, but really they didn't have the marks of integrity, of depth, of quality, of character. And so what we see is men who are not boys, but men know where they're going, they have a vision in their life. Number three, men are team players. Boys aren't team players. They always want to be the quarterback. They take their ball and go home. They want all the attention on themselves. But a man understands there's a role he plays, and he slots in that, and he wants people around him. Number four, men are protectors. We are wired to look out for those who are in poverty. We should be doing that, looking out for people who are around us that need us to come under them and support them, especially and specifically wives. And number five, we see that men hold fast to a minority position. They don't need to be always in the majority. They stand fast. When other people say, don't do that, they say, no, this is what I feel needs to be done, and they do it. These are the marks of what every true man has running through their life.
Great foundation. Good for 7 points.
Yeah.
Touchdown, wow. Tome. First down, Mingo.
Tom goes back to the well with something he's done already and scores strong.
What is he doing now?
Kelly, can you get a closer look?
Yeah. Brad, it looks like Brian is actually moisturizing. And also, it appears that he's using Jergens, which means he will be smooth for this contest today, but will smell like my grandma as well.
That brings out a flag.
An appropriate flag.
Unmanly-like conduct. Real men don't moisturize, Brian. 15-yard penalty. Chuck Mink.
All right, he gets the unsportsmanlike 15-yard penalty. Going to be good field position. Let's see how Chuck responds.
Needs to take advantage of it.
So as Brian said, we're going to be looking at two people, and one of them is a man named Samson. And Samson is a man who had a God-given vision for his life and absolutely failed at it. Absolutely failed at it. And that's why we're going to look at him, because he fell prey to one of the temptations that we as men regularly face as it relates to the vision God gives us in our lives. Samson's story shows up in the book of Judges in the Bible. It's one of the history books that tells about many of the heroes in the nation of Israel. And I'm actually going to read from a Bible, because I think it's about time a preacher actually used one of these up here in the Super Bowl.
Well, there's wow. A flag there. There's no flag on that.
Oh, he's keeping it in his pants. I mean... The flag.
Judges. Samson's mom was not able to have kids. An angel comes to her one day, so Samson kind of has a miraculous beginning. The angel says, "You are barren and childless, but you are going to become pregnant and give birth to a son. Now see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink, and that you do not eat anything unclean. You will become pregnant and have a son whose head is never to be touched by a razor, because the boy will be a Nazarite, dedicated to God from the womb." And here's the vision that is for Samson's life. He will begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines. God-given vision for his life. And one of the things that we see very early is that Samson was set apart by God for this vision. He was a Nazarite from the womb. And what that meant was, Nazarite was a special vow that people would take in the nation of Israel that said, "I am set apart for God." Sometimes that was for a period of time. For Samson, it was his entire life. And one of the marks of that was that his hair was never to be cut. He had a God-given vision for his life and God-given abilities to do it. There's a phrase that shows up over and over in the book of Judges for Samson. It's that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power. Samson had superhuman strength for the purposes that God had given him, for the vision that God had given him for his life. And you could say that every time the Spirit of the Lord came upon Samson in power, he became the Old Testament version of Shaft. I mean, seriously, when the Spirit of the Lord came upon Samson in power, he was a bad mother.
Shut your mouth!
You can't be saying that!
I'm just talking about Samson!
We can dig it.
But as we're going to see, even though Samson had this power and this vision, he absolutely blew it. He blew it because he abused the power and he used it for himself instead of using the gifts that God had given him for the purpose and the vision that God had for his life. And man, I want to ask you a question. What would you do with that kind of power? Do you have the kind of character that would match that kind of opportunity in your life? Samson didn't, and it actually led to his downfall. See, if you've heard anything about Samson, that name before, it usually is connected with the other woman that we're going to talk about, with the woman we're going to talk about today, Delilah. And Delilah, let's just say Samson had a problem with the ladies. He had an issue with lust, and he got into relationships that weren't healthy for him. And Delilah was actually put in Samson's life by the Philistines to take him out. And the reason she was able to do that is because Samson fell prey to one of the greatest temptations we have as men, something that Jim Collins, in his book How the Mighty Falls, called the hubris born of success. And that's what Samson fell prey to, the hubris born of success.
Oh, Tom's throwing a challenge flag.
Yeah, it wasn't too manly a throw either.
What's your challenge?
You know, people talk about me making up words. That's not a word. Hubris. What is hubris? That's not a word.
Tom is challenging Mingo's use of the word hubris. We'll go to the booth.
Wow. This is kind of embarrassing for Tom. We've got a review. Thoughts?
A house devoid of dictionary.
Yeah. All right, well, this one should be easy. Tom scores early. Mingo trying to come back. He will obviously get some field position on this as well. Your reaction?
Well, you know, the replay shouldn't take that long.
Matter of fact, the replay should be over. Guys, do you have a chance to go into the booth, see what David's looking at? David!
That is funny.
He got the mushroom. David.
Sorry.
Popcorn down.
Sorry.
Your next line is, "Upon further review, Mario."
I've got popcorn.
Yeah, take your time.
Upon further review. The word hubris is in fact true, and it does mean excessive arrogance or pride. Loss of timeout for Tone.
Thanks. All right.
How could Tone not know that word?
Shocking.
So the word hubris actually is used a lot in Greek mythology. And in Greek mythology, it's used to describe the pride that ultimately leads to a hero's downfall. And that's exactly what happened with Samson. His hubris, his pride, led him into a relationship with a woman who was really only in his life to take him down, to sap his strength, and to find out the source of his weakness. But because he was so proud and so into himself and into his powers, he actually, over time, gave in to her. He gave in to her constant asking, "What is the secret of your power?" And it went back to that Nazarite vow, the fact that his hair was never to be cut. And he said, if you cut my hair, you will actually take my power away. And let's pick up the story at that point. It says in Judges 16:18, when Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, come back once more. He has told me everything. So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands to pay her off for giving them this information. Having put him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off the 7 braids of his hair, and so began to subdue him, and his strength left him. Then she called, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. And he awoke from his sleep and thought, I'll go out as before and shake myself free. He had kind of given her some false information before, so he didn't lose his strength for the thing she was trying. But this time, she did in fact know what to do. And it says, he did not know the Lord had left him. That's probably the most tragic fall that could happen in any man's life, is to actually get to a point where your God-given vision and your God-given abilities, instead of using them to honor God, you actually use them for your own purposes. And you get to a point where you don't even realize that your strength has been taken away. And that's because Samson fell prey to the hubris of success. So men, I want you to know you have a God-given vision. There is a vision God has for your life. There's a place of influence he has for you. And you have God-given abilities to accomplish that vision. But the biggest threat, the biggest temptation that you and I face is to fall prey to the hubris born of success. So men, one of the things we need to be very vigilant about in our lives is to guard against hubris.
There is no hubris in Chuck Mingo. 7 points, good for a touchdown.
Wow. Great drive. So Mingo capitalizes on his field position, and we're tied at 7.
And that's the end of the first half.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the second half, Kelly Russell will be taking the place of Brian Tome.
Hold it. They're letting a woman in the game?
No way he does that. David, you're not going to allow this.
What happened?
I am going to allow it. Yes, I am.
What's this about?
What is this crap?
We can take it. Yeah, but...
Yeah. Blankets and... Awesome. You got floral arrangements for the Super Bowl? What?
Extreme game makeover?
All right, hold it. Wait. David Russell, Kelly Russell... Mm-hmm. You guys are married?
They are married. What? I know that for a fact.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
Can I have the ball second? I have some stuff to do.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Chuck, you're up.
Is this going to create some bias with our referee?
If he knows what's good for him. It's 12 degrees outside.
So the question, men, is how do we guard against the hubris of success? It's one thing to say that, but how do we actually do it? And we find the wisdom in a collection of wisdom literature in the Bible called the Book of Proverbs. And it's actually, you almost think that the writer had Samson's story in mind when he penned these words in Proverbs 11. It says, when pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. As men, how do we leverage the God-given vision and the God-given abilities in our life? We do it by practicing humility, by knowing and understanding the men that God has created us to be.
Oh, well, we got Tome coming out in a pink Snuggie.
Oh, my goodness.
And a white headband.
What?
Here comes Harry Martha Stewart.
Give me a little sweat.
He's petting a kitty.
Brian, what?
My own little kitty cat, I will love Brian. Him and hold him and squeeze him.
Pink, Snuggy, Kitty. What happened? Hey, here. Try this. Snap into a Slim Jim.
What is this stuff on me? How did this get here?
There you go.
Gosh, my goodness.
Get that stuff off, man. I tell
Please.
You what happened.
What?
You got hoodwinked at halftime.
What does that mean?
You got bamboozled at halftime.
Speak English.
He doesn't watch BET. Come on.
Forget the definitions. I tell you what, why don't you finish the rest of the game on my team? I don't know what Kelly did to you at halftime, but you can get a chance to get back.
I would love to be on your team.
You got it? Yep. Let's do it.
Man. Great start to the second half by Mingo, and that was a great attempt at a chest bump, even though you dislocated Chuck's shoulder, Brian. I'm going to allow it and give you 7 points. Touchdown, Mingo.
Nice move by Chuck Mingo.
That's big. Well, all right, if these guys are combining, that's 3 touchdowns. I guess we got to Mingo 21 and Kelly Russell nothing. She got a long way to come back.
Long way to go. To Mingo, huh?
I like that. To Mingo.
Yeah, that's good.
Hey. Mingo. All right, I guess we got a little bit of Super Bowl history here. Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time at the pulpit, Mrs. Kelly Russell.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm here for you. I'm going to be right back there. If you need anything, just let me know.
Oh, come on. Throw a flag on yourself.
Cover your ears. This whistle's kind of loud, okay?
Thank you. Thank you. Well, in fact, my name is Kelly Russell. And it's true, I am married to the hottie in the hot pants back there.
Yeah. Ladies, take note. Affirm your man. Touchdown, Kelly Russell. Oh, affirm your man, ladies. Affirm your man.
Oh, my goodness.
Get out of here.
A one-play drive. Come on.
Awesome.
The threat of a couch.
Well, yes, so here I am. And you might remember that last weekend, Brian, you know, sang this song and dance about, hey, women, bear with me for a time. I'm just going to speak to the men in the room and just pretend like it's just me and the guys. Well, right now, ladies, it's just you and me. We're just going to pretend like it's just us in the room, and we're going to have some girl talk. Sound good? Yeah. All right. So I was thinking maybe a lot of you women are wondering, what does any of this have to do with me? Or maybe some of you are thinking, yeah, I'm in. I know about 14 guys that need to hear all this right now. Sign me up. How can I help? And I have the answer to all that. I've learned this firsthand. It's simple. Doesn't matter whether you're married or single, young or old, mother, daughter. I have the answer for you. Mind your own business.
Yes. Yeah. Like very nice. Very nice.
Ladies, again, take note. Mind your own business. That's good for a touchdown. Yes. Kelly Russell.
That's a good score there. That's legitimate.
That may be the best point made all day.
Yes.
I know that's in the Bible.
Seriously, mind your own business. Now, let's be clear. The men are not putting me up to this. Don't worry. They have put me up to a lot today, if you haven't noticed. And also, let's be clear, the men wrote the script. If you can't tell, men wrote the script. But they're not putting me up to this today. And men, don't worry. This isn't some Jedi mind trick that's going to lead you into a pink Snuggie. That's not going to happen either. This is just me up here sharing with you a little bit about my story and a little bit about what I've learned. And I believe on the other side, you'll come away encouraged. So let me explain. What does it really mean to mind your own business? Well, the first thing it means is to butt out.
Amen.
I learned this firsthand because my butt was in. My butt was not out. My butt was everywhere. I was always happy to insert myself in situations and, you know, just...
Easy, David.
I don't even want to know what's going on back there. Holla. I don't even... I was always happy to insert myself in situations and insert my opinion and, you know, just make sure that things were going the way I thought they needed to go. You know, I thought that if something good was going to happen, it was going to be up to me to make it happen, especially if it was something good and something that I wanted. And you could ask my husband, this played out the first 10 years that we were married quite a bit. I was always happy to try to coax him into thinking like me, or directing him into doing what I wanted to accomplish. And, you know, just you know, happy to try to lead him this way and that. And there's a word for this. It's a simple word. It's nag. And I can tell you, as a recovering nag, nagging does not work. It does not work. Let's take... This could all go awry for us. Nagging does not work. Let's take a closer look at the story of Samson and Delilah that Chuck brought up earlier. Actually, Judges 16:16 says, with such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was tired to death.
Read that again, please.
That's how Delilah got it out of him. That's how she got the truth out of him. You know, I mean, the story actually says that Samson loved Delilah, and she leveraged that and nagged him day and night until he was tired to death. Well, you know, I just want to be clear right now. Women, if you want to rob the men in your life of their strength and you want to see them lose their courage and ultimately fail, then just nag them. In Delilah's case, her nagging and manipulation actually led to Samson's capture, blindness, imprisonment, and death. Now, I nagged about little things, and I nagged about big things. I nagged about life-changing things. For example, a few years ago, David came home one day and said, big thing at work, they want to relocate us. And it was a decision that we were able to make. It was just an opportunity for him and his company, but it was a big decision. And we wanted to discuss it, and we wanted to pray about it, and we wanted to do what God wanted us to do. We wanted to follow his plan for us. And we prayed about it, and on the other side of that, we discovered that we were on opposite ends of the fence. David felt very strongly that we should move, and I felt very strongly that we should stay. And as a result of that, I concluded, clearly there was something wrong with David's prayer life. And so I started in on him about it. I just couldn't understand it because I really felt like God wanted us to stay put. And so I started asking him, well, what exactly do you say when you pray? And how are you praying? And what do you eat when you pray? Where in the Bible does it say we should move to Tennessee? You know, I was on him about it. And it really started to wear on him, and it wore on our relationship. And it brought separation in our relationship. And I really came to a place of brokenness and found myself one night alone on my couch, sobbing, and I just said out loud to God, I'm so confused. I don't understand why David and I are so off in this. Tell me what to do. And immediately these words popped into my head. But out. What David and I talk about is none of your business. Stop talking to him about me and start talking to me about him. Whoa, I was floored. I knew this had to be God because I wouldn't have thought of this. But I was compelled, and I said, okay, I was desperate. Okay, I think I'll do this. And so I stopped. I stopped bugging him about it and bringing it up, and I just started praying for him. And I did begin to see changes in him and changes in our marriage and, even more importantly, changes in me. You know, when we were making the decision to move, I wasn't thinking about what it was like for David. At the time, he was a new father, and he was trying to take care of his family. He was trying to get ahead in his career and, you know, trying to please his wife. And what he needed was encouragement and trust, not criticism and prodding. And we didn't move. We didn't move. It was God's intent for us to stay. That was the best part. But in the midst of making that decision, God had a journey that he wanted to take David on. He had vision for David's life that he wanted to use this time in David's life to begin to unveil that vision for him. There are things he wanted to teach David, ways he wanted to grow David, that were going to ultimately bring him more into being a man and bless me and my family. And I was sabotaging that. I was getting in the way of that. My nagging and prodding was postponing that growth. So on the other side of all of this, what I learned was that God was for me. It's like God was saying, hey, we're all on the same team here. We're all in this together. You just have to trust me. This story that I'm sharing with you right now is a wife story. But I have lots of nag stories. I've nagged everybody. I've nagged, you know, the men in my life, and that sounds weird, all the men in my life. What are you looking all mean for?
Almost brought a flag.
You know, friends and coworkers and bosses and my dad. I'm sure if I had brothers, they would have nag stories. But, you know, so this isn't a wife thing. I believe that as women, we're taught this behavior, we're taught things like nagging and you know, attempting to manipulate, influence situations, that we have to do this kind of thing to get what we want. And if we don't behave in that way, then things aren't going to go well for us. If you had shown me Delilah's story, I would have said, well, I'm not like her. She was ruthless and greedy. She was out for the money. My intentions were good. But the truth is, I was just like Delilah. You know, I just had different motives. I was trying to accomplish this goal of having the family life that I wanted. And I was honestly trying to do what I thought God wanted us to do. But I was trying to control the situation. You know, at the core of it was this belief that I had to try to control people and situations or else it was all going to fall apart. It was all based on fear. But I didn't want to be a fearful control freak carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders. So I butt out.
I don't get it. I kind of like it when my wife's butts out. Did I miss the point?
Maybe. Aren't they like the guys on the Muppet Show? Okay, so let's talk more about mind your own business. There's more to it than just button out. Mind your own business also means to mind your own business. And my hope is today that you'll be encouraged to do this. I want to give you permission, ladies, to mind your own business. You know, mind is a verb. It means to care for, to look after, to pay attention to. And so I want to encourage you today to mind your own business and start looking at your own life. What is God's vision for your life? What is the purpose that God has for your life? You know, what is your destiny? Who is the woman that God created you to be? That's what minding your own business is, being and knowing and being the woman that God created you to be. In high school, I started reading girly magazines and, you know, all those articles, not only about, you know, how you should look and all that stuff, but the ones that talk about image and loving yourself. And I could not wrap my brain around what any of that meant. I had no idea who I was or, you know, what that meant to love myself. And I came up with this twisted notion that that must mean I'm supposed to choose who it is I want to be and then be and love that person. Sort of like choosing a character in a play and then just perpetuating that character. So I didn't really know myself, tolerated parts of myself at best, so I just decided that I was going to be Rachel Green. You know, WWJD, what would Jennifer Aniston do? That was my solution. There she is. And, you know, so this went on my senior year in college. I was really excited to graduate, and I was going to become a young professional. I had no idea what that meant. What does that mean to be a young professional? Okay, everybody knows but me. I'm going to start getting into Glamour and Cosmo and reading all about it. And I started studying and trying to see how I'm supposed to look and act. And I looked the part, but on the inside, I was clueless. And this became the pattern in my life. New season of life, new magazines and TV shows to guide me, and all the while being terrified that I was going to be outed as a fraud. I finally got tired of living like this. And a few years ago, took the step and just asked the question. I can't make heads or tails of this, God. There's parts of me I like. There's parts of me I don't like. There's parts of me I'm faking. So, God, who am I? Please show me the vision that you have for my life. Who am I? I was really nervous about this because I knew God was going to answer me. I just was afraid I might not like the answer. You know, what if I'm not really... The real me doesn't listen to Michael Jackson or color my hair. What if that's not really me at all? What if the real Kelly Russell is actually a lot more like TLC's reality show 19 Kids and Counting, Michelle Duggar?
Oh, hey, Kel.
Hey, there she is, Michelle Duggar.
I think David's What's hyperventilating.
Oh, heavens. Pull yourself together. We have three. We're not counting.
You're going to be good, Dave.
You're good. You're not Jim Bob. I love Michelle Duggar, and I love kids, but I don't want to be her. I was just nervous God was going to give me this laundry list of things that were wrong with me, and like I was some kind of money pit that needed a total rehab. But what actually happened was, through various ways, God started to reveal to me the vision that he had for my life. He started to reveal the unique destiny that he had for me. And he started to show me more about who I am. And as it turned out, the good parts were actually parts that were from him that he intended for me. And some of the bad parts were actually lies that I was believing about myself that weren't me at all, and they weren't from God at all. And side note, if you want to come to understand more about what that means, to shake off some of the lies that you might be living under and walking and living more in a place of abundant freedom, then I really encourage you to participate in the journey coming up in a few weeks. But back to me. When I started to ask that question and started to begin that journey, I had to also make the decision to stop asking Oprah and stop asking Carrie Bradshaw and stop asking Cosmo who I was. I started to learn that God has unique intentions for each one of us that are special to us, that don't hinge upon imitating other people or trying to fix other people. Here's what Jeremiah 29:11 says. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. And that's not the collective you and the generic hope and the generic future. That's the individual you and the unique future and the unique brand of prosperity that God has for you that you're really going to love. You're going to feel joyful and excited when you begin to discover what this unique future is for you. Really quick, I just want to say this to the wives. Wives, if something is broken in your marriage, please don't fall into the pit of picking apart what's wrong with your husband and focusing on his shortcomings. Instead, focus on you. Mind your own business and ask the question, what needs to change in me? Did you know 1 Peter 3 actually says that husbands will be won over without words by the behavior of their wives? An actual promise from God that if we choose to mind our own business and stop nagging, that our husbands will be won over. Now, I did it both ways. The nagging thing, it got me what I wanted in the moment, like a spoiled toddler. But in the big scheme of things, I was emasculating my husband. You know, I was wearing down at him and tearing him down slowly and robbing him of his strength. Well, I don't want to do that. That doesn't work for me. That doesn't work for my sons, for my family. But on the other side, you know, when I began to stop nagging and mind my own business, God kept that promise to me. So I've lived it both ways, and I've received that promise from God. I started minding my own business, and I came to understand more about who I was created to be. And in that, I felt free to stop trying to control and living out of fear, and instead experimenting with faith and trust. And I just want to be clear, you know, this nagging story that I've shared with you and this mind your own business thing, all the butt out stuff, that doesn't mean, oh, it's time for you to be the weak, quiet wife, know your role, shut your hole. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that you will come to understand going from girl to woman as you begin to explore this idea of the vision that God has for your life. All right, what does that mean? Who's talking to you in there?
The three judges upstairs. They're telling me that we're giving you 6 points for the topic that you covered.
All right.
And the know your role, shut your hole gives you an extra 2-point conversion for 8 points.
All right.
Wow. 8 points.
Yeah.
2-minute warning. Brian Tome, you're up.
Wow, ladies and gentlemen, Mrs. Kelly Russell takes the lead.
Know your role, shut your hole. You know the emails I would get if I said that? Do you understand that? The emails, the complaints.
The emails you get if you try it.
Great. Isn't that great? Phenomenal. Utterly phenomenal. You know about Kelly? I mean, Not every woman is going to be like Kelly. Not every man, thankfully, is going to be like myself or Chuck. But there are certain things that every woman, every man is, and you are free to be the person that God has created you to be. Not the stereotype of what a real man is, which oftentimes is a boy. not a stereotype of what a woman is, a strong woman is, which is oftentimes a spoiled girl, but an actual person who is free, free from the assumptions that your parents have put on you, free from the baggage that Hollywood puts on us, free from the pains and bruises that we've committed and brought ourselves in the past. That's just why I'm so excited about this journey that's coming up in a couple weeks. If it's your first time at Crossroads or you've been around here for a long time, start figuring out what kind of group you want to get in with a small group. The whole journey is free. I believe it literally about freedom and financially free. I believe that this is going to be perhaps the best thing that's ever happened to you. I believe that to my core. And the main thing that God wants from you, he wants you to be the woman that he's created you to be. He wants you to be the man that he's created you to be. Let's pray. God, I'm thankful for today. Thankful for the humor that was here. I'm thankful for the strategic thinking that took place, the artistic ideas, the humor, the grunt workers out in the parking lot, the people who were seating people in here. There were just a wide variety of positions on the team that made today happen, and I'm thankful for that. And I'm praying that whatever you've given us today that's supposed to transcend simply the humor of the 70 minutes, that you would help us live with that this week and actually begin to change us in the person you have created us to be. And I pray these things according to your name. Amen.
Amen.
That's the ball game, folks. Russell 22, Tomingo 21.
We got a winner. Kelly Russell, it took only one woman to take down two men.